to get specific. I think plants,
we are so terrific.
Plants are generous souls. They feed all the
We are back in the greenhouse, the KSRO greenhouse. I'm Steve Gardner, along with Gwen Kilcher, hosting Garden Talk Live on the radio. Our question before the break was about a huge Bilbergia Newtons that Ellen has owned since 1989. It's blooming abundantly, and it's doing great. She wants to separate it into easier-to-handle sizes. And how does she do this, and is it going to keep on blooming?
Okay, so Bilbergia is Queen's Tears. Yeah. And it's a very beautiful, shade-loving plant. And like I said, it looks like it has a growth habit like Cymbidium orchids, except the flower stalks arch over, and they have these beautiful pinky, I can't even explain the shape of the flower. They're just so cool. So I would wait for the weather to warm up a little bit. And they multiply by sending out making little babies, like an artichoke plant does. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you could look around the base of the plant, they're on the outside, all around the circumference of the plant, you'll see little baby plants coming out. And if you need to, if you have to, you can pull that plant out of the pot so it's easier to work with and get to the root system. And you can break those little offshoots, little babies, you know, pull them off the plant, making sure that they have roots to them, attached to the plant, and then transplant it in a good planting mix. Keep it damp, keep the soil damp, keep it in an area where it gets filtered sunlight all day, which would be really nice. And then eventually, you know, if you've done it correctly and watered correctly, then the roots will take hold and then you'll have new little baby plants. The center of the main plant might be dying out at this point because that was the original plant, and then as the plant gets bigger and bigger, a lot of times the center is dead. So if you see that, I mean, you could, however you can, if you get the plant out of the pot and you lift the whole thing up and maybe you could move it, you know, you rock it back and forth and maybe it comes apart in two pieces. If that's good enough for you, okay, fine. Otherwise, look and see what you have to work with. And the younger the plants, obviously, the longer they're going to live. And don't put them in too big of a pot. Look at the size of the little plant that you have. And if you have to put it in a 1 gallon plant because it's that small, then do that. And then you have, you know, the plant doesn't have that much soil that's going to stay too wet or too dry. And it'll be easier to move plants around if you want to.
And Ellen just sent us a photo of her plant.
That's stunning. I don't know why you'd want to divide that. But sometimes if it's outgrowing the pot, then yeah, you need to. Unfortunately, when it's blooming, you know, it seems to bloom more often than it doesn't. And that's the hard part, is dividing this plant when it's blooming, because when you disturb the root system, you will destroy a lot of the new fine hairs, root hairs, and it might just stop flowering. And but it'll be flowering in no time, so if you're listening, then Ellen, do what I say, and good luck.
And it is a beautiful plant.
It is
just
beautiful.
Starting to bloom.
Now she's making me want to get one of those, too.
Mitch, good morning. Welcome to Garden Talk Live at KSRO. What can we do for you this morning? Hi.
Greetings and salutations, kind folks. Hi. Two things. One, Gwen and Steve, my mother from Menifee, Myrna, sent you cookies and fudge, which I'll bring next Saturday.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you, Myrna.
The queen of the oranges, and importantly, I bought a grafted, I'm looking at it now, it's a Snow Queen on Lavelle nectarine last year at the farmer's market, and I have noticed what I think is an invasive, not a critter, but leaf curl, and I don't like, and I'm not into spraying chemicals, but do I got to spray this thing with copper sulfate? It's still in a 5 gallon bucket. I haven't planted it yet, so I have no idea what to do.
Is it flowering, or did it flower?
It did flower.
Okay. Well, you're too late for the spray. That should have been preventative spray.
Okay.
You can pick the leaves off that are in infected with that peach leaf curl disease? Or,
yes, ma'am.
You know, does it have that reddish, bubbly, blistery look to it? Or are they just green?
I'm looking at the little guy right now, and they just have, like, it looks like what, like a blister on the leaves, and I've been picking them and putting them in the, away from my compost pile and stuff, but it's really overtaken about 60% of the plant.
Yeah, okay. I was hoping that it was maybe aphids sucking the juice out of the leaves, causing them to curl. But since you see the blistering part, then it is that peach leaf disease, peach leaf curl disease. And so that variety is pretty susceptible to that disease. So keep the tree as healthy as possible. Don't overwater it. Make sure that you just keep the soil damp. Did you say it's in the ground or in a container still?
No, it's in a container. I wasn't sure if I was going to give it to a neighbor or stay here, but
okay,
it's
so
still in a container. Should I transplant it?
You can, yeah. You can, you know, it's, the soil's probably too wet now, so wait for the soil to be workable and then go ahead and transplant it in the ground. Full sun all day long. Get some white water-based paint and thin it out with water and paint the trunk of the tree all the way up to the first branch. And then stop. And that will prevent it from getting sunburning in case the watering is not quite right. But that'll help with preventing the bark from blistering and peeling and then insects coming in. You have another problem. So
will that white paint work on me if I go to Mexico?
No. Black paint will.
Well, I'll see. I'll drop off some goodies for you Saturday from my mother, Myrna, the queen of the oranges, and you'll have your share coming up here when she starts to harvest again.
Thanks, you.
Very
thank
sweet.
Her
thank
for
you,
her generosity,
Mitch. And then wait, next year in the wintertime when the leaves fall off and if you do any pruning, then that is when you're going to be spraying the copper spray. And you'll spray it a few times because the products that are out there on the market now are not as effective as what we had many years ago, so you have to spray quite often. So
I will do that and follow your. And also, by the way, my okra is 6 inches tall.
Man,
why did you start your okra already? Wow.
Because I gave you seeds. We're having a contest.
Right. Wow, but I wasn't going to start mine until the end of April.
Well, you're going to lose the contest. Well, maybe yours will catch up, Gwen.
No, we're not talking about it.
You guys take care. Thank you so much for your advice.
Thanks, Mitch.
Yeah, well, wasn't
we're talking about harvesting, how successful we are in harvesting okra, not...
Not who gets it first.
I hope not. I don't think that's what we said.
Don't go away, Joelle. Your question's coming up next. It's Garden Talk live at KSRO in Santa Rosa.
North Bay play-by-play home of the Golden State Warriors and Oakland Raiders. FM News Talk Radio 103.5, 94.5, KSRO.
I'm John Russos. The Santa Rosa office of my firm, Cutter Law, is working with victims of the North Bay fires. If you're a fire victim, bring in your insurance policy for a free consultation. Then we will take action on your behalf against the company that caused the fire that took your home. The hardest part for people is knowing where to start. You have a mountain in front of you. You've lost everything that you ever had, and you got to figure out where you're going to take this mountain on. Is it with the personal property? How do you even put together a spreadsheet, a table, a list of everything that you used to have? You need somebody who's been through this before and somebody that can have your back and also tell you when people are doing the right thing. There's nothing like having somebody that's been through it before to help you figure out how to get through it on your own. Contact our Santa Rosa office for a free consultation. Call Cutter Law Santa Rosa at 306-0540. Call 306-0540. We can help.
Creams Towing, this is Arlene.
You know Creams Towing for cars, but Creams Towing can handle even the biggest jobs. Need a motorhome towed? Call Creams. Are you a rancher that needs large equipment moved? Tractors or horse transport trailers are no problem for Creams Towing.
Just call Arlene at Creams, 588-1250. Creams Towing, this is Arlene. With competitive rates and certified Class A drivers, Creams can tow 24/7. They can handle rollovers, heavy-duty accident recovery, and winch out.
Are you a Class A driver looking for a great company to work for? Interested in learning the towing business? Creams is expanding and wants to add several drivers. With the largest fleet of medium and heavy-duty transport vehicles in the area, including a state-of-the-art 50-ton wrecker, you'll learn from the best. Openings for Class A and C. Creams will teach the right candidates.
Be a hero on the highway. Call Creams, 588-1250.
Come to the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, voted Best Farmers Market. You'll find garden starts from La Vida Buena Nursery, Savor Farm fresh eggs and produce like fresh strawberries, avocados, and Humble Roots organic sprouts. Enjoy farm-to-table almonds, walnuts, and healthy salad greens. Discover quality beef, pork, fresh seafood, and freshly made sausages. Multiple food vendors are serving up an excellent breakfast and lunch using farm fresh products. Minhee's Korean cuisine, Eli's authentic Mexican food, Mi Fiesta's fresh tamales, and a whole lot more. Santa Rosa's Original Certified Farmers Market at Luther Burbank Center for the Arts is open year-round, Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 to 1 p.m. Thank you, Sonoma County, for voting them number one, the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
It's Garden Talk Live at KSRO, and that brings up the whole discussion. We could spend a lot of time on it, but we won't, and that is the effectiveness or not the effectiveness of these copper sprays since the formulation was changed because of concern about copper runoff and high concentrations of copper, and thus they are much less effective in controlling these fungal diseases, especially the peach leaf curl. If we even look in the Pests of the Garden and Small Farm, the Grower's Guide to Using Less Pesticide, which is a UC publication, which was one of our Bibles, it states here under peach leaf curl, and I quote, however, to be effective, copper-containing compounds must have at least 50% copper to be effective. Those containing less do not adequately control leaf curl, despite advertising claims. Now, if you go and look at any of the copper sulfite sprays, and we just brought up one here from Bonide, which is a very reputable company, B-O-N-I-D-E, the effect of copper in that peach leaf spray is 10%. So you're going to have to do a lot of spraying, a lot more spraying than you had to years ago when the copper levels were much higher, which controls peach leaf curl.
I wonder what their spraying recommendations are.
That would be good. But again,
read the directions.
It's not the same products. And we understand why these were regulated because of excess copper runoff. I understand all that. But these products do not control the peach leaf curl as they did before. So having said that, let us move to Joelle, who's been patiently waiting for a bit on hold. So Joelle, thanks for waiting. And you're on Garden Talk at KSRO. Good morning.
Good morning. I had a question on some redwood trees.
Okay.
I just planted some, like, 20-gallon redwoods, and I was told that watering, they need some misting, and I'm very confused on what type of watering system to put in for them.
A misting system?
That's what I was told, but is that wrong? Do I just water them from the bottom?
I don't want to ask you who said that, but a 20-gallon redwood tree, how tall are these trees?
Probably about 8 feet.
6 feet? Okay. So when you planted these, you know how big that 20-gallon root system looked like, right?
Yes.
So can you imagine how long you'd have to keep those misters on for that are going to mist the ground until it gets to the bottom of the pot, bottom of the root ball? Okay. So redwoods have more of a fibrous root system compared to big roots like oak trees and other ornamental trees. So they are fairly shallow rooted, more shallow rooted than a lot of other trees. So they like, and they are a tree that loves water. That's why they do really well along the coast compared to inland here where it's hotter and drier and we don't have the fog and everything like they do out in the West County. So where are you? Where are these trees planted?
In Glen Ellen.
Glen Ellen. Okay. So it is pretty darn hot out there. Okay. So you're going to want to water those trees. If you have a drip system, you could put at least 6 to 8 emitters around the circumference of the root ball. Okay, so you know how wide that root ball is. You want to make sure that the water gets in the root ball, so it waters the root ball and the soil just outside the root ball. So when you dug your hole to plant these trees, how did you dig your hole?
What you mean size?
Yeah. What did you do?
Probably about twice the size of the 20-gallon, and underneath it probably an additional 8 inches.
Okay.
And filled it back in.
Okay, so you dug the holes wider than the pot size, all right?
Yeah.
And just a few inches deeper than the root depth of the root ball.
Right.
Okay, so that's pretty good. And then what did you fill back into the hole?
Some compost, the dirt that I took out, and horse manure, old horse manure.
Okay. And you have anything on top of the ground for a mulch to cover up all the bare soil?
I did not.
Okay, so that you can do at some time later on. So you have a drip system out there. You're going to put emitters all around, a ring around the root ball of the tree. Some can be in the root ball, some just outside the root ball. So all that soil will get wet. So you think now you have a redwood tree or many redwood trees that you planted that love water. You're going to have to make sure that you can get like 2 gallon per hour emitters. So a lot of water will come out. And as long as it's soaking down into the soil and not running off and going someplace else, you want to make sure that the water goes down into the soil. And you will have to keep that on, and I'm not sure for how long. This is where you have to do some investigative work. Long enough for that water to go all the way to the bottom of that root ball. So
okay.
redwoods need a lot of water. I mean, if you look around and you see redwood trees growing in areas where they're not getting sufficient water, you see how they have that brownish look to them, or their tops are dead, or they're slowly dying, they're dying a slow death. Right, it's because they're not getting enough water.
Okay.
So right now is not a good time to tell, but you wait till early summer, and you have to get out there and water your trees. Keep it on for 2 hours and see how deep. Dig down a few inches, maybe 6 to 8 inches down in a few areas around the plant. See how wet that soil is or not. See where that water is going and how deep it is, and then monitor it. You can come out, a few days later, check the soil again. If it's still pretty wet, okay, you don't have to water. You might go 2 weeks or so, or 3 weeks, or a month in between waterings. And so if you put mulch on top of the soil, that will help hold the water in the soil longer so the sun doesn't evaporate it and weeds don't grow. And so and as that mulch starts to break down, it will feed the soil, which will then provide nutrients for your trees. And so there you go. You'll have happy trees. But you do not want those root balls to dry out. I mean, now you've lucked out with all this rain that we've had, but you do not want them to dry out at any point, because it's going to take them like a year to really get established in the ground and for those roots to grow out of that planting hole and into the existing soil. And you hope that they're damp, and that's because those trees love water. So.
Okay. Fabulous. One more quick question.
Sure.
So, we lost some redwoods in the fire. So we have, they were like 38 years old. So we have growth coming up from the stumps.
Mm-hmm.
And do I just treat them the same way that you just described for the younger ones?
Yep.
Or, okay.
They probably won't need as frequent watering as the new trees, because they already have their root system anchored in and everything, and they're established, and they're older trees, and they've survived this long with whatever care you've been giving them. But, you know, to make sure that they do have some water during the hot weather, that will help them grow faster than sitting there going, you know, it's like somebody being hungry all the time. Well, you'll function a lot better if you had food and water. So the same thing with these older trees that need to grow, you provide them with some a little bit more water than what they've had in the past, and then they'll be happier and they'll grow faster for you and hopefully be healthy.
Fabulous. Thank you so much.
Okay. You're welcome, Joelle. Yeah. Good luck with all. And mark it down on the calendar when you watered and how long it was on, and then that way you have a remembrance of what to do next time if there's any adjustments.
Beautiful.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good talking with you, Joelle. Via email from Jill, good morning, Steve and Gwen. Unfortunately, I lost my house in the Tubbs fire. Sorry about that, but my vegetable bed survived. I want to plant some food crops, but have no fences to protect them from the deer. I know I can't grow leafy greens, and I've read that they avoid peppers and tomatoes. What do you think? Also, any deer repellents that I could purchase? Thanks. That's from Jill.
Sorry, Joe. They do eat peppers and tomatoes. They eat everything. I can't think of a vegetable that they don't eat. And plus, the deer have been changing over the years, and things that they didn't eat, they're eating. Even herbs. They never used to eat thyme and rosemary, and now they're nibbling on things here and there. There is that, what is that called? Liquid fence?
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be very popular.
Deer Away is one popular
deer,
one.
Yeah, but I remember the real one that kind of smells like stinky, pungent garlic stuff. I think it's called Liquid Fence.
Okay, here's another one that we have recommended over the years, and it's supposed to be really good. It's National Scent Deer Repellent. National Scent Deer Repellent. It's made down in Riverside. The package label says squeeze a few drops of National Scent Deer Repellent, whose active ingredient is 50% animal gland extract, which is a euphemism for lion urine, on a rag or cotton ball placed in the area to be protected. And supposedly it works really great. National Scent Information Hotline. You can go online and find out who distributes it. So there's another one. There's also, of course, the powdered eggs, powdered egg whites.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
Oh, you don't think
so? No. I've been hearing so many stories of people that use all kinds of stuff, and slowly but surely, the deer are eating right through it. Even if you spray Tabasco sauce and cayenne pepper and everything, they're desperate, and they want to eat. But I know that liquid fence, and if you spray it, if you follow the directions and you use it all the time, the stuff stinks to high heaven, though, and that's the problem. And so, you know, you don't want to put it on your vegetables that you're going to harvest. I mean, that's probably not going to be very tasty. But maybe you can put up some makeshift cages around that little raised bed that you have and protect those plants that way.
Here was an interesting tip that we've talked about for many, many years ago, an inexpensive, effective deer barrier. And here's what you would use. 60-pound transparent fishing line,
mm-hmm.
Okay, strung between stakes, preferably metal, at least 4 feet long, driven about a foot into the ground. You use two strands of the fishing line, one at knee level and the other along the top of the stakes. And, of course, you can use the taller stakes to protect taller plants. Because the rationale is deer don't understand something they can feel but not see.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point. And they will avoid contact with it. And the solution, obviously, it's really unobtrusive and has worked for a lot of people. This was a tip from a Marin gardener that had contacted us many years ago.
And I would put that at least a few feet away from the raised bed, because you don't want them sticking their head through that and then having at it at your vegetables. So, you know, put it a few feet away. So when they think about coming towards that box, then, like you said, they'll get touched by it.
Exactly.
And go, Well, then why not just put up an electric fence?
Well, that too. But this is inexpensive and effective.
Yeah.
And you can get that 60-pound transparent fishing line anywhere. And really, this gardener that had contacted us years and years ago swore by this,
mm-hmm.
said it really works well. So, Jill, that might be something to think about as far as fencing off. Deer will eat anything, like you just said. They don't read the lists.
Yeah.
What kind of vegetables? There's really nothing that's going to be deer proof.
And this year, with, you know, most of their landscape gone, they're going to be wandering around in places where they didn't have to go before. So
the best way is fencing and possibly some deer spray.
Yeah, but I wouldn't put it on the vegetables.
Oh, that's true.
You know, like, don't spray it on a tomato or your pepper. But the plants would be okay. But, you know, I think there's that fine line. As soon as that stuff starts to wear off and you're not out there to be on top of it, then they're going to be on it.
Okay, so sorry we don't have any recommendations.
But I like that fishing line.
The fishing line. Yeah, if you want any more information or some feedback, give us another email. Shout out, Jill, okay? We'll take a break. We'll come right back. We'll go back to calls. 636-1350. Just cleared the line, first time since 9:30. No waiting for instantaneous gardening advice. Sage wisdom from Gwen Kilcher. We'll also review the topic of Gwen's column in today's Press Democrat in the gardening section. I'm Steve Garner in the KS Arto Greenhouse at 11:05. A return visit from a wonderful baker that we've not seen in many, many years, joining John Ash and me on the KS Arto Good Food Hour.
And I have a funny story to tell, Steve.
And a funny story to tell. All that coming your way next.
FM News Talk Radio. North County 103.5. South County 94.5. KSRO.
Come to the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. Voted Best Farmers Market. You'll find garden starts from La Vida Buena Nursery. Savor farm fresh eggs and produce like fresh strawberries, avocados, and Humble Roots organic sprouts. Enjoy farm-to-table almonds, walnuts, and healthy salad greens. Discover quality beef, pork, fresh seafood, and freshly made sausages. Multiple food vendors are serving up an excellent breakfast and lunch using farm fresh products. Minhee's Korean cuisine, Eli's authentic Mexican food, Mi Fiesta's fresh tamales, and a whole lot more. Santa Rosa's Original Certified Farmers Market at Luther Burbank Center for the Arts is open year-round, Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 to 1 p.m. Thank you, Sonoma County, for voting them number one, the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
Picture yourself outdoors in California. Can you hear crashing surf or feel the cool breeze of a forest? Our parks showcase the best of California, but they need your help. Saturday, April 21st, join the California State Park Commission as we celebrate our 20th annual Earth Day restoration and cleanup, presented by PG&E. For 20 years, volunteers have been building a better California, one Earth Day at a time. Visit CalParks.org to volunteer at a park near you. If you've been affected by the recent wildfires, Wells Fargo is here to help. Customers can get mortgage assistance and process insurance checks at its mobile unit at 2960 Cleveland Avenue in Santa Rosa, or visit any Wells Fargo bank branch in the Santa Rosa area. Kickstart your home's recovery with the Wells Fargo mobile unit at 2960 Cleveland Avenue in Santa Rosa, or at any Wells Fargo branch location, or call 888-818-9147. That's 888-818-9147.
Here's something good for your soul Sunday mornings with the Center for Spiritual Living. Tune in at 8:30 and hear a half-hour message of practical spirituality from Edward Viljoen. You'll hear spiritual practices translated into inspirational ideas for everyday living. Spiritual Living with Edward Viljoen, Sunday mornings at 8:30. Think of it as spirituality for people who don't like church. That's Spiritual Living with Edward Viljoen, brought to you every Sunday morning at 8:30 on News Talk KSRO.
I'm Dane Lobb. I'm a public safety specialist with PG&E. If you encounter a downed power line, you need to stay away from it. Call 911. Let our first responders come out and handle it. Police and fire will respond, as well as PG&E. PG&E will make the scene safe.
Northern Germany, a vehicle crashing into a crowd outside a popular bar in a busy area of the city of Munster. At least three people dead, at least 20 injured. A leading German newspaper reporting that authorities believe there is no terrorist motive and that the driver is believed to be a middle-aged German man who had psychological issues. Correspondent Katerina Vitosi with our partners at Sky TV with what police are telling her.
They're describing the vehicle as a small van, and police have cordoned off the area around it. From images that we've seen and verified, it looks like this van has crashed into pedestrians in an area of the old town in Munster. It looked like it was a sunny day. You can see cafe tables strewn over the pavement.
And police have urged people in the city of Munster to stay inside of their homes and avoid the crash scene in the city's historic downtown. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Sonoma County's most accurate, dependable forecast with KSRO's Daniel Trucios.
A bit more rain this morning than dry throughout the day. High 61, 57 on the coast. Few clouds tonight, low 45. Mostly sunny for tomorrow. High 68, 58 in Bodega Bay. Few clouds for Monday, but it's 75 degrees, 64 on the coast. Depend on weather every 30 minutes on FM News Talk 103.5 and 94.5 KSRO.
Garden Talk Live at KSRO. Gary Blossy, who's been a guest on Garden Talk before, grows some of the greatest peaches in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
But he also has another sideline.
Yeah, well, he's a master of all trades, I have to say. And he sells everything at the farmer's market in Windsor, which is starting tomorrow. It's their first day of the market. And he's going to be doing some knife sharpening. So basically anything that has a blade that needs sharpening, take it to Gary.
Gardening tools?
Anything. Gardening tools, shovels, whatever. I gave him my pruners just to see what he can do one day. And, oh, my gosh, almost took my finger off. It was that sharp. So, yeah. So I know they're hard to find.
That should be a slogan.
What?
Blade so sharp, it'll almost take your finger off.
Yeah. And I know he's got a lot. He has a lot of people that have been asking him about, how do I sharpen my blades and all sorts of tools. So head out to the Windsor Farmers Market tomorrow, and they open at 10.
636-1350 to reach us on Garden Talk Live. No one on hold at this moment, or you can email Steve at KSRO. We had a little preliminary aphid discussion last hour. Bruce is following up and saying he was at a lecture on insect control by Rinkin Vitova, R-I-N-C-O-N-V-I-T-O-V-A. Rinkin Vitova is an insectiary online company that's been around, I think, for 60, 70 years. It's quite remarkable. They have beneficials and all kinds of things. And Bruce says that the rep said to control aphids, you need to put out ant traps to control the ants, which farm the aphids and drive off beneficial insects that would otherwise eat the aphids. So what do you think about, number one, putting out ant traps, Gwen, and then ordering beneficial insects, number two, to control aphids? And we also have another tried and true method to suggest too.
It depends on what plant is being attacked by aphids. If you have, you know, your little vegetable garden and they're being attacked, like I said, you know, on my eggplants, controlling the ants, you have to see where they're going. Okay, you can follow their trail if they're growing up a tree, if you see them growing up your little vegetable plants, see where are they going? And then you will see either aphids or mealybugs, scale, anything that sucks juice out of the leaves. The ants are going after that juice, which is called honeydew. And then as a thank you to the aphids, they will kill and destroy any insects that want to come and eat the aphids or the scales or any other bugs. So just because you take care of the ant problem doesn't mean you've solved the problem and your plants are going to be fine. No, because they're still getting the life sucked out of them by the aphids and scales and whatnot. So the ants are an indication that you have another problem. If you put ant traps in containers, okay, that's fine. You'll help kill the ants that are multiplying in your soil. But take care of the aphid problem, scale problem, and whatever it is that the ants are going after. And then if you go ahead and put out, if you don't do anything about the ants and you put out, you disperse beneficial insects such as ladybugs, lace wings, soldier beetles, any of those guys, those ants are going to want to kill them.
That's right.
So take care of the ant problem if they're going up and down trees. You know, you'll see them going up and down in a straight line or back and forth, you know, two lines up your fruit trees or so. You could put some tangle foot or something around there, some
sticky barrier.
The sticky barrier. So the ants can't go up there anymore. Well, what you've done, though, is you've trapped those ants that are already there.
Yeah.
So, okay, you know, you can get a strong spray of water and blast them all off, and there you go. But you'll probably still have the aphid or scale problem, and that you'll have to directly, you know, take care of that directly with a soapy water or an ultrafine spray of, you know, ultrafine oils or something, or then let the beneficial insects come in and do their job controlling those guys. But just because you get rid of the ants, it's not going to take care of the main reason, the main insect that's attacking your plants.
And a few years ago, actually it wasn't a few years, we first started talking about this study back in 2014-15, and we've mentioned this before, and that is the effective insect control technique offered by earthworm castings, something completely natural, and it's phenomenal, phenomenally effective. This was a study done back in 2013 by Ohio State University Farm Extension, and they did a complete trial, really formal trial, using earthworm castings to control whitefly. Remember, the question was about whitefly.
Now, are they saying earthworms or are they saying worms?
No, earthworm castings.
Earthworms, specifically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. And how effective that was in controlling whitefly. Well, that was so effective that they said, well, you know what, we should test for other things like aphids.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, aphids were found to be effective not crossing the earthworm casting barrier.
Aphids?
I'm sorry, ants.
Okay.
Not only
okay.
aphids, but also ants. So I'm going to go into the ant part next. But you apply about 1 to 2 inches of earthworm castings around the plants. Aphids completely gone within 4 to 6 weeks. Fantastic. Then ants leaving their nest within 24 hours and not returning. They won't even cross the layer of worm castings for 2 weeks. And then they'll start to slowly, gingerly start to cross them. But if you rake the top layer of worm castings, the ants will again refuse to cross. So using worm castings in the soil area around the plants or the trees repel ants for many, many months. So here's a very natural control that's not costly and also works on a broad spectrum of repelling a number of different insects, earthworm castings.
I have a question, though. Does it say anything about putting the earthworm castings on the ground out there under the trees before leaves come out, before anything? Because once the aphids are there in your plant, right, say they're up in your plum tree causing or your apple tree causing the leaves to curl. Okay, so you put the earthworm castings out there and you set it 4 to 6 weeks later, then that's sort of the damage is already done. So I'm wondering if there's something, some information there that we're missing about putting it out there just as the leaves are emerging to prevent the aphids from going after your plants, and then you'd reapply it every so often. And
there's nothing in the study that states that, but it would seem intuitive that that's what you would want to do.
Yeah, I'd be putting it out there before I see any aphids, because if it's going to take 4 to 6 weeks, then your plant's already damaged.
But this was a 6-year study from Ohio State University, mulching
Amazing.
With worm castings, repelling a variety of pests, including whiteflies, aphids, spider mites, a number of other things too. So it's certainly worth a try.
I'm going to look them up because I'm sure they've done more research since then.
Yeah.
And so see what the latest information is about.
Diane, we'll take your question next, live Garden Talk on KSRO.
Weather every 10 minutes mornings, every 30 minutes all the time on FM News Talk Radio, 103.5 FM and 94.5 FM, KSRO.
I'm so excited to be the first to tell you that Friedman's Home Improvement is celebrating their annual Founders Day with a no-tax sale this Saturday, April 7th and Sunday, April 8th. The price you see is the price you pay. Pretty cool. I was thinking since Friedman's Home Improvement is having a no-tax sale this weekend, it's the perfect time to save on that new leaf blower, chainsaw, or generator. Plus, all flowers, vegetables, and irrigation solutions for the garden, all at the lowest prices, and no sales tax this weekend at Friedman's Home Improvement. I know I could use a few pairs of Carhartt shorts and maybe a couple new power tools. So the price I see is the price I pay. No tax. Got to love it. This weekend only at Friedman's Home Improvement in Santa Rosa, Petaluma, Sonoma, and Ukiah. Friedman's Home Improvement. You're free to build. While supplies last, discount applies to items in stock only. See store for details.
It's the third annual North Bay Boat, RV, and Sports Show. Enjoy 3 days of dealers showcasing boats, RVs, trucks, and toys. Retail vendors with everything from bicycles, footwear, and personal watercraft to boats, outdoor trinkets, and fun. It's time to get out and get down to the Sonoma County Fairgrounds for a full weekend of demos and hands-on enjoyment. The Sonoma County Boat, RV, and Sports Show at the Sonoma County Fairgrounds, Friday, April 20th through Sunday, April 22nd. $5 admission, with $1 from each ticket going to the Sonoma County Resilience Fund to address mid- to long-term needs of those impacted by the fires. Enjoy free admission Friday, and kids 12 and under are free all weekend long. The North Bay Boat, RV, and Sports Show, April 20th through the 22nd. Check out more details, vendors, and ticket info at SonomaCountyOutdoorExpo.com.
If you love ice cream like we love ice cream, you've got to love Cold Stone Creamery. And now you can get a $50 gift certificate for only $25 at MySonomaDeals.com. We make our rich, super creamy ice cream fresh in every store every day to create the ultimate ice cream experience. Now for half off, get your $50 gift certificate for only $25 at MySonomaDeals.com. While you're there, check out other half-off deals for places like Lupe's Diner and Carter House Inns. That's MySonomaDeals.com.
The new John Deere 100 Series lawn tractors at the Home Depot cut a lot more than grass. They also cut oil changes down to 30 seconds. With their patented system, oil changes are as simple as click, lock, and done. Plus, come in now for up to a $300 gift card with select John Deere riding mowers that will also cut your costs. Get cutting with time-saving John Deere mowers and a free gift card only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Purchase a John Deere riding lawnmower in-store or online between April 5th and April 18th, 2018, and receive a Home Depot gift card. Amounts vary by model.
Looks like Diane is chomping at the bit to plant tomatoes, possibly. Hi, Diane. Welcome to Garden Talk at KSRO. Good morning.
Oh, good morning.
Morning.
I hope this doesn't sound like a silly question, but I plan to go to Renee's sale. I went last year. It was fantastic. And buy tomato plants. And the people there, I don't know if I was talking to Renee, but they're very helpful. And so last year I got carried away. I bought so many tomato plants, and then I brought them home, and I had to squeeze them in. And I did not have a lot of luck with them last year, and I think they were just too planted too closely and maybe not enough air or circulation, even though they get full sun. So I have a raised bed that is 19 inches high. This is what I did last year. 19 inches high, 19 inches deep and 12 feet long. So in something like that, how many, I think I had at least 8 tomato plants, maybe 10 in that last year, and it was way too much. So how do I control myself this year and just buy enough plants?
Okay, wait, you said it was 19 inches tall. How wide? How wide? 19 inches deep. Okay. How many feet wide?
No, it's the deep means wide. I'm sorry. It's 19 inches wide.
Okay.
And 19 inches high and 12 feet long.
Okay, by 12 feet. Let's see, 12 feet long, about 20 inches wide. You could go with about 4 tomato plants. And don't even put them in a straight line. Put them diagonally, you know, like a zigzag, I should say. So, you figure each plant is going to need 3 to 4 feet of room. So, you know, ideally 3 plants, and you could put other vegetables in there, but I'd be pushing in it, and I would be putting in 4 plants.
Yeah, because I love tomatoes and I want to plant as many as possible. And there's so many out there that I see and I want to buy.
Yeah, so but you don't have the room for it. So
I don't have the room.
And like I said, put one in the back corner, one towards the front, and then one in the back corner, one towards the front. So they're zigzagged.
Zigzag. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll give that a try.
Okay.
And do you think I should put, I have all new soil. Do you recommend putting a little Epsom salt in the hole before you plant it?
No, I would just get a really good planting mix. You can even get a few additional bags of steer manure or some compost or something and mix it all up into the soil. And there you go.
Yeah. Okay.
And you watch the watering. And then I'm going to tell Renee not to sell you more than four plants.
Yeah. Well, actually, I have two beds this size, so that means I can buy eight plants.
Okay. And do you bury?
Yes. Okay.
Do you bury the stems? Do you bury them a little bit deeper than how you?
Oh yeah.
Okay. All right. So you know about that.
Definitely.
Okay.
I'll do that. Okay. Thanks.
Calling from Windsor, California, this morning, Christian. Good morning. Welcome to Garden Talk live at KSRO. Hi.
Hi. How's it going today?
Great. So thanks. What can we do for you?
I have a beautiful peach tree that we just bought this house a couple years ago. And the peaches are like tennis-sized balls. They're absolutely amazing. Well, I just looked at it today, and the leaves look like they're having a curl to them. They're just starting. They're not very long, maybe about an inch longer. And I don't know what's going on, but all the leaves around are starting to have this weird curl look or this bubbly to the leaf. And I was wondering, how do I treat that or fix that, or what is it?
Yeah, unfortunately, that is called peach leaf curl disease. And so if you want, you can go out and pick off the leaves that are affected, but then you're going to be probably picking off 3/4+ of the leaves. Mm. So after a while, the damage is already done. There's nothing you can do about it. The leaves will just die off and they'll fall on the ground. But if you want to pick them off before you'll see when they start to turn brown. You can pick them all off before they drop on the ground, dispose of them out in the garbage. And then the tree will send out a second set of leaves. In the wintertime, after you've pruned your tree back, then you should be spraying with a copper spray for a peach leaf curl. And you follow the directions on the label. You'll probably need to spray at least 3 times. And you'll need to spray when it's not going to rain for at least 5 days after that. Mm-hmm. So there is some preventative measures that you need to take in the winter to prevent this disease from the springtime. So there's nothing you can spray on it now. Nothing.
And it won't jump to the other. I have all these other, like a crepe myrtle. It won't jump to those leaves, right? It's just they'll stay on there.
Yeah, it's specific to peaches and nectarines.
Okay, great. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So.
All right. Well, I guess I have my work cut out, and because I want to save my tree. So.
Yeah, keep your trees as healthy as possible. Just make sure you give them enough water during the summer. Put some compost on the ground so you cover up all bare soil. No fertilizers are necessary if you use an organic matter that just breaks down and helps feed the soil. And
I got this organic stuff from King's Nursery, and they seem to, I did that with my citrus trees and said fruit trees, and I did that like last weekend. So I just kind of, you know, put it around on the ground and then I watered it in.
Okay.
So, thank you so much for the advice. I really appreciate this.
Yeah, you're welcome. And just keep in mind, wintertime, after you've pruned, then you're going to start doing some spray.
Okay, excellent. I'll be right on that.
All right,
okay,
and Christian, keep an eye out, too. Sometimes you'll see your peaches are going to be deforming, and next thing you know, they're shriveling up, and then they're not doing so well, and you'll see some twigs starting to die back. You can cut out any of that affected growth and just get rid of it. Okay, because anything that you leave behind is a food source, is an inoculant for that disease to happen next year. So keep an eye on the dying twigs and the shriveling up fruit.
And just get rid of it,
The
garbage.
Prune it off and get rid of it.
Okay, that sounds great. Oh, my God. Thank you so much for the news. You guys are awesome.
Thank you.
Great hearing from you from Windsor. Thank you, Christian. Hi, Steve and Gwen. What bulbs could I be planting now for summer and fall bloom? Any suggestions? This is from Jane.
Well, the ground's a little too wet to plant anything in the ground. So if you want to put things in containers, that's fine. Let's see. It's a little too early yet to be planting any bulbs now. You want to wait for the weather to warm up a little bit. You've got dahlias, of course, yeah. Jim Lang's favorite, and he gives lectures through the Master Gardeners Library series about how to grow and care for dahlias. That is not to be missed. Gladiolas, of course. What else is out there? Some summer blooming. All your lilies, Asiatic lilies, Oriental lilies, Tiger lilies, all those different lilies are really cool to plant. Let's see. It's too late for the alliums because mine are already starting to bloom. Your favorite nursery will have a selection of bulbs to be planting now.
And so. We're out of time for the hour. Do you have...
Begonias.
Oh, begonias.
Yeah, good those one. Hanging begonias.
Sure.
Yeah.
So there's some suggestions. We have just enough time for a humorous anecdote from Gwen Kilcher.
Oh, gosh. What happened to me? Okay, so I was harvesting some lettuce the other day, and I had this beautiful lettuce. Washed it really well, made myself a beautiful salad. So at this point, if you're eating anything, anybody, stop eating. So I'm chewing on my lettuce salad mix, and then all of a sudden I taste this funny, slimy stuff.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, what the heck is this? This doesn't taste like a piece of lettuce. So, of course, I spit it out, and I look at it. Do you know what it was?
No. A slug?
Yes.
Oh, it was a slug.
Yes. Well, let me tell you, they're nasty
tasting.
Well,
you got some extra protein.
No, because I spit it out.
We'll be back after this. Good, lovely story to end on.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gwen.